This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak!
Hold on. Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Hip Hop Grew Up.
It grew up.
It's almost turkey time.
It grew up. First exposure to hip hop they threw up. It's not culture. It's trash. An epidemic. A rash. Flash in the pan. A fad. What's up?
What's up, man?
It grew up.
Man, we got some things to talk about today.
We do. Thanks to all the listeners and everybody who's promoting already and showing love to the pot.
Shout out to hashtag everyone supporting hashtag hip hop grew up, the Yak, Orange Bloods. Shout out to a lot of the cool stations that we got on the Yak, man. Shout out to our boy Jeff. Shout out to who else?
Ross.
Shout out to Ross. Shout out to
Matt.
Shout out to Matt. Shout out to, man, there's a couple listeners. Dominican Jay, shout out. He gave us a cool compliment. Shout out to him. Shout out to Back.
Yeah.
Feedback.
And all the family that hasn't even heard this yet. Just everybody. Uh-huh. Love to anybody listening. Yeah. Because there's a reason you're listening.
All right. So last week we left off with talking about, obviously, you know, you and I are UT alumni. We love Longhorns. Mo Bamba was an awesome player from there. He had there's a big hip hop song with his name on it. This rapper named Sheck West from New York, who's actually signed to Travis Scott. That's also part of the new update. I didn't even know. You already know.
Right. We found some coincidences, so to speak.
We should have known about these coincidences. But, so he's Sheck West has a song called Mo Bamba. And you said they were what?
Friends from Harlem, like childhood friends. That's really all I know. Secondary sources. But reading on the internet, and that's what I found.
And then, you know, you and I are in the education sector. We see friends like this. We see high school friends and people getting along all the time.
All the time. Long-term relationships.
Those are big influences in a person at that age. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's like your boy.
Yeah, that's your social context. That's your boy. And you hoop. Mm-hmm. Y'all both hoop. And he's at the top. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
That's a free throw for him. I heard the song's a freestyle as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the same thing. It's just like, yeah, you know, off the top of the head. Those kind of sometimes make the best songs when musicians or vocal artists just go out like.
Energy.
It just raw, like jazz moment, solo, you know what I'm saying, going off. And you get songs like that. Mo Bamba, big song. Big fan of that song.
Mm-hmm.
Other music, some new things we're talking about. The hip hop group Black Eyed Peas, which consisted of, you said, three B-boys and at one point, girl from L.A. by the name of Fergie.
Yeah, later on they had picked up Fergie and the Black Eyed Peas.
Mm-hmm. But big hits, man. Will I Am, known worldwide as a producer, you know, from working with Black Eyed Peas, and he's done like a lot of songs, like Oh My God, the Usher song.
Yeah, I love that song.
That song jams. You can still play that.
Love that song.
I still drop that. Like,
yep, that's my Cali anthem. I was in LA at the time where they're from.
Living
there when I was out, and that was Will I Am. Will I Am, Black Eyed Peas.
Will I Am,
yeah, that was the hit in the gym.
And then like all the Black Eyed Peas songs are jamming too.
2010, yeah, but back at the turn of the century, they were B-boys. They were L.A. B-boys who could get down on the floor and bust.
And like, they just created a sound that made them sound like the 2000 version of like you know, Sly and the Family Stone or something. Like just new, just real happy songs. Like just right. Good jamming.
Funky B-boy type of, you know.
Yeah. With like obviously the newer, you know, 2000 equipment and synthesizers and plugins and things like that. But yeah.
Right.
Jamming, dancing, dance music for sure.
Kind of rootsy at the time. That's the joint. That's the jam.
You're talking about the early Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
Explain to us.
The B-boy version.
Give us a year. Give us a context. The Black Eyed Peas that you're referencing right now.
Right now. I don't remember when Joints and Jams came out, but I know for a fact that by the time they were touring behind it, when they came through the Austin scene, mm-hmm. we would always cross paths.
Explain the Austin scene.
Well, the Austin scene is all kinds of scenes and neighborhoods and people and affiliations and people who come from different cities. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their own version of their own scene and their crew. And a lot of people don't even know each other, but a lot of people do. But within that infrastructure for, like, you know, that mainstream downtown, like touring world and production world, that level of exposure with bigger crowds and, you know, bigger tickets and whatnot. C3 was a big piece of that. And basically home base for C3 at the time was Stubbs.
So C3, the entertainment booking, like
at the time, though, it wasn't C3 yet, but it was just one of the C's, and this was Charles Attal and his productions.
Companies that would book
Stubbs.
Shows.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so it was Charles Attal. There's Amy Corbin, and Amy Corbin and Charles Attal were just friends of ours because Austin is a small town.
Yeah.
So we had been, you know, moving through a crew called Relax and then dissolved it into this hip hop hump day concept. But the whole time we knew them. Those are just people we took shots with and came across and drank wine with.
Yeah.
They looked out for us because they saw what we were doing from the Mercury days, you know, taking that into the turn of the century. So when the Black Eyed Peas would come along and play Stubbs, we'd be the opening act. I think Hip Hop Hump Day actually opened up for the Black Eyed Peas.
Hip Hop Hump Day. Yep. Like, and I remember you guys were just getting booked at a lot of places at the time, like even mm-hmm. like some raves, or a rave or something that they had out mm-hmm. somewhere. And they would bring, like, it would always be like a side act, like the side tent or the side stage where we have like hip hop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing Black Eyed Peas or groups like that along with Hip Hop Hump Day. So,
yeah,
Hip Hop Hump Day was the place to be on Wednesday night for live hip hop.
It was. I think Stubbs, uh-huh. Charles Attal, uh-huh. they had a lot of respect for that at the time. So they would allow us to go over to some of their big shows. Mm-hmm. And do a piggyback event where people just walk around the corner to the Mercury. And so that allowed Will.i.am and other people like that to sit in with us because we would have a party tailored because their shows would end earlier. So we could show up with the billboards, hold them up. And a lot of people in that scene knew who we were because we were popping on the Wednesdays already.
Yeah.
And just migrate a whole show over there in a jam session and everything. So there was always situations where, for example, Will.i.am would be at Hump Day, or one time we went right up the block from Stubbs and did like a little jam with, you know, just live band freestyle vibey type thing. And they came over there and jammed with us like for a while.
Nice.
Yeah. I remember getting his number and everything. Will.i.am.
Babu Blake's Will.i.am.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But they're like, I remember that scene just being real, I would say like rootsy hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would say backpacker hip hop, or like mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, I'm thinking Ruckus Records, you know what I'm saying? I'm thinking
right.
things like that.
Underground.
Underground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mos Def, Talib Kweli were just mm-hmm. really big in the scene.
B-boy stuff.
I remember Z Trip would come like mm-hmm. every month, it seemed like it, you know, do a hip hop show. So just really cool. Mm-hmm. So that was a scene back then. And so.
Now Z Trip's with LL.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
Yes. And then, but going back to that Austin thing, that was a scene back then. I want to keep talking about like those early Austin promoters and kind of how your career kind of blossomed out of that.
Yeah. I mean, I was trained to rock the mic. And by the way, that first Black Eyed Peas single, Joints and Jams, came out this week. But last week mm-hmm. in 1998, so exactly 20 years ago.
Man, throwback.
Joints and Jams.
Damn.
So the turn of the century, like I said. My training was always just to be dope, like live.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, rocking the mic like a showman, somebody who could spit live and freestyle. And, you know, you just remember that I was nice, right? So once that happened, people would co-sign and support. And part of that support group, again, was the underground scene, the B-boy scene, C3, you know, people I knew from UT. people back in Dallas, people in different parts of the state.
So you started rapping in college? Did you rap in high school or middle school?
Just for fun, you know, talent show or, you know, around school.
But did you have like raps or record anything?
No, not really. Okay. No. Every once in a while I record like a diss song or, you know, something just to play to my friends, but no studio.
Okay.
I think I started going to the studio a little bit, messing around with Relax. We didn't record a lot, but we had a few sessions in the late 90s.
But most of your thing was just kind of doing things live, like a live musician would in Austin today.
Yeah, just
right. Like, hey, it's all about this Wednesday night. How are we gonna make this Wednesday night pop off? Right.
Yep. And then around the turn of the century,
yeah,
around the same time we're talking about, that's when I started going in recording, especially once I became a solo artist. When we dissolved in Hump Day, then I could do Bavu Blake's.
So if, who was all in Hump Day?
A whole bunch of folks. It started with, it really revolved around Sheldon and Jay, who were the other two members of the group that I was in before I was a solo artist.
What group is that?
Relax.
Okay.
R-E-E-L-A-K-T-Z. And when we dissolved, they built Hump Day and I was living in Dallas. They invited me back down and I moved back to Austin maybe the day before. Mm-hmm. So they had been working with a lot of musicians through the Mercury scene and they were the connections and the plugs. I was like, you know, the secret weapon of talent, you know, to boost everything in my own way. But they did more than that, even though they were also a DJ and an MC. So then Jay kind of faded out of it. And I started rocking the mic, and Shell was, you know, the producer of the Hump Day.
That was his baby.
Oh, yeah. It was Jay and Shell's vision, and Shell was the sound, because Jay just kind of faded out, and I was on the mic.
Nice.
Yep.
It was a beautiful thing. I know it was a really packed event. So
it was fun.
That was a big part of the hip-hop career, was doing that part.
Yeah. So when the week that was over is when I released Creating Hustle, my first album, like immediately, like at the exact same time.
And then what producers were on it?
Adrian, Oba Thompson.
Adrian who?
Adrian Quesada.
From?
Oh, Electric Recorder Studio, you know, Brownout, Grupo Phantasma.
That's important.
On and on.
Third Root. Very Austin.
The guy.
Just trying to be specific.
Grammy Award winning, you know, family man, awesome studios. Mm-hmm.
So he made a couple beats. Who else? Nick get on there?
DJ Massive, Nick Knack, Arsenoptics, Obadele Thompson. Who else produced on there? I had a band that I was producing.
Nice.
Brought them in. Who else produced on?
So Creating Hustle, you had that, and then you moved some units.
Yeah, I need to go back and listen. Oh, and Patrick Murphy, I'm tripping.
Oh, yeah.
Up South, Overnight. I mean, he really kind of stole the show.
Nice, yeah. Very nice production.
And we met him as somebody who had production for Relax. Mm. Not for Bavu, you know? So that's just how it ended up. Because again, Jay kind of faded himself out.
You did that, and then?
Then I released my stuff. And a lot of people supported it, reached out to me, and just, you know, a lot more opportunities.
Austin Chronicle cover or nah? Definitely, right?
That was about probably 4 or 5 years after that.
Okay.
I'm sure I had a long Austin Chronicle story at the time, but that's it.
Okay. Because, you know, it's always like the. You know, Austin, you know, it's like almost like a staple. Yeah. I also heard it's a curse too. Like when you're on there, like that's kind of like the glass ceiling. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's critical. All right, it's really, you know, it's a photo shoot at the end of the day.
You're right, and
realistically, but in our minds when we're younger, I was on the cover of Chronicle, but it's pretty much a photo shoot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was dope at the time.
We both been on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
I did a bunch of mixtapes around the same time, early 2000s. I was DJing a lot in 6th Street.
I was working in the store.
I was going to UT, and I would go into this little hip-hop store and try to hustle my mixtapes. I did a bunch of mixtape series from, like, What It Do to, like, you know, something Rapper's Greatest Hits and a couple other personalized mixtapes with rappers. Before all that, I did, kind of just tapes at the high school. Mm-hmm. Like kind of just record like, you know, some like dance songs or rap songs, anything that was not on the radio. Cause on the radio back home, all we heard was Spanish music and country music. So anything that was not that's what I put on the mixtapes. Mm. Then I did like a hit that series hip hop that looked like IHOP.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing was always kind of like using brands just like in hip hop records to get samples. I just said get samples of things that you see normally and just flip it.
Right.
I think I saw like a sticker of that and then use that. And I know Carlos from Top Dollar had that What It Do shirt. And I was like, man, that's a cool mixtape concept.
Mm-hmm.
So we did those mixtapes for a while. And I think the first one we had Chameleon on the cover because I met him at, I think he met him at a, I think it was a Trey concert.
Mm.
I went down there with DJ Sense. Shout out to Raymond. We went down there. It was like on 6th and Red River. I think it's called Sol y la Luna right now. It's that Mexican restaurant.
Mm.
Right there, it was like a sweaty ass concert. Met Chameleon there. Gave him one of my mixtapes. I forgot. I think it was like Austin Powers. It was like a different series.
Right.
And I think on that one, you were rapping on it, right? Or did you rap on the hip hop series? Had you?
Both.
You were on the hip hop ones? Yes, you were.
Mm-hmm.
So on those hip hop, I did like 1 through 5 and just put a bunch of like rap songs on it.
I probably scratches. Came in on 2 or 3.
I like DJ Rectangle a lot and would try to imitate him in my mixtapes. We put like New York stuff, some Southern Texas rap.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was doing the What To Do ones, it was like all Texas rap.
Right.
And then, you know, I would like, I think I really want, no one really knew Bun B or Zero, so I want to do greatest hits on them because I thought they were awesome.
Hmm.
And then had some words with my folks that rap a lot. There's a miscommunication on how we put some of those mixtapes, but shout out to my boy International Red and everyone. And I actually got to do another mixtape for them,
mm-hmm.
for a Zero mixtape for them.
Yeah.
And it was a version 2 of one that was already put on the internet, but this one's never been released. And I remember taking it to Mike Dean's house to get mixed and mastered. And it was, he had a big, huge house in Cypress. And I remember seeing like a closet full of hard drives, like a 100 hard drives. And he's like, oh, these are like sessions or songs or albums. Hmm. I think he was already like mixing 1 or 2 Kanye albums at the time. Hmm. But I remember like, oh, Kanye's engineer is going to mix my mix, like, you know, engineer my mixtape. And he was doing it for Rap a Lot. And it was so awesome. So I remember doing all that stuff. Even had a studio in Houston for a while. And, you know, getting involved with Chameleon Air, going on tour. That was like probably like the best DJ job ever. Just like kind of doing that for 10 years.
Right.
And then, you know, doing shows with like Bun. I got a tour a little bit with Devin the Dude. Shout out to my boy Matt for hooking that up. And
what's up, Matt?
Taking us to Europe. That was fun. Going out there with DJ Chill. And then just kind of having that studio in Houston around 2012, 2010. And then kind of seeing the new generation do this all over again, you know, with like Score More and kind of like Sasha being the new Charles Attell.
Right.
And taking that brand even bigger and getting even bigger artists to come do what, you know, the generation previously did, just kind of like on a more like social network, more internet driven level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the college promotions.
Insane.
His Stubbs was that venue he had down there on 6th Street.
Mm-hmm.
That home venue initially.
Yeah, it used to be a Hard Rock Cafe. Remember that didn't last that long? Mm-hmm. That's some awesome stuff, right?
Aces Live, is that what it's called?
Yeah, something like that.
Aces Live, I think.
Yeah. I remember there was a showcase. I want to say it was South by Showcase. And I think Bun B was talking. They were with the Rosenberg brothers from New York, and they had an interview session, and I remember it was at the same place, and it was, I want to say Aces Live or something like that, but it used to be the old Hard Rock Cafe because the build up was real nice. Remember that?
Yeah, I did a Create and Hustle release party at that Hard Rock Cafe with SoulCity.com. Same album we were just talking about.
Man,
same block Soul as City. The Parish, same block as Hump Day.
What happened to Soul City, the editor, or
Donnell? He's got a grown kid. He's always doing amazing work. He does a really important South by mixer every year where he, you know, kind of brings tech to the black community in a real dope way. Networking.
Shout out.
Donnell Creech is amazing. So is his son, Jordan. He's an artist, smart guy. Got to work with him thanks to Carl Settles and E4 Youth. That was Youth Media Project back in the day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Shout out to Carl Settles,
E4 Youth.
Humberto Perez, Ride Against the Storm, E4Youth.com. Love it. Love it. We always swirl around between the music and the education and the family. We both got two kids and a bunch of other people's kids. This is a fun way to like just get it all out, man.
Hip hop grew up.
It grew up.
And it continues to grow up.
It does. And we continue to celebrate creativity.
Speaking of, I know you were talking about who's running things. What do you mean by that? You said something. I got it in our notes. I got
it. We always talk about like, you know, people just running things.
What? Like running what?
Like Travis Scott, running Texas.
Yes. And musically, well, hip hop, rap music, Texas, he's got it.
Yeah. Or Juicy J making a long run.
What do you mean? What's Juicy J? Juicy J from 36 Mafia? What's he doing?
He's well into his 40s and he's still producing at a high level.
Still making beats.
Making beats. You know, collaborating with the big names. You know, hanging out with Stan Lee.
DJ Paul, still making beats. I think he landed that Drake and Jay-Z record.
Juicy J's with Katy Perry and who else? His latest
looking
joint,
him
he
up,
got everybody.
Juicy J, if you guys don't know Juicy J, we definitely talked about 36 Mafia on
all
the
time.
Episodes.
We say A-Volume, Jay-Z, Outkast.
Juicy J, rappers out of Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Another group from Memphis, Tennessee, right?
I used to avoid 666 when I was young because it was 666.
666 Mafia, you're mixing things right. Like the devil music or something. I still get that completely.
I mean, that's what it was called. Hypnotized Mind with the Grim Reaper dude. You know what I'm saying? That's just.
It's very dark music.
Yeah, it's the Wicked tradition. You know, Midwest really is
very
closely associated
sound.
With.
Yeah, so he wants to run Columbia Records, you say?
He said he wants to run Columbia Records.
Columbia Records, I need to look. That's, how long has Columbia Records been around?
It's like Mariah Carey, Lauryn Hill, forever. How long they been around, man? I don't know.
It's like Sony now, right? Like they're
Sony and Columbia have been the same thing for a long time. Yep.
Oh yeah, we're looking this up.
But he wants to run it. Is he ready to be a mogul like that?
And I remember when we were talking about this during the notes, I was asking you what, you know, we were an educator. Did he graduate high school? Does that even matter?
Right. Did he graduate high school?
Mm-hmm. Oh
yeah. Today, the
Columbia Records founded in 1887. It's 131 years old.
Right.
Founded by Edward Easton.
You reminded me, the student today, I think he was trying to get my attention, and we were doing a team building activity of some sort, some reflective work. He said, I'm going to drop out. I said, well, Jay-Z dropped out. So that reminded me of that, whether Juicy J graduated high school. Mm-hmm. Jay-Z
can run did
a
it.
Record company.
He's a billionaire. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, him and his wife are
something.
Very close to it. I'm just surprised how long Columbia Phonograph Company was founded by 1887.
Phonograph.
Founded by a stenographer and a lawyer from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Group of investors started making records literally.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Memphis was an early adopter of record making.
I'm sure, yeah. This was in the first people to make recordings. So they probably invented the technology with the, yeah, it's a lot to read, but man, so he wants to run that company. That's very possible.
He mentioned L.A. Reid and
not doubting it at all. Juicy J impresses me. Someone who's won Academy Award and the Grammy.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many of those. So shout out to Juicy J.
Yeah, he stepped up his broadcast game too. Like he has a real unique voice. It's not like he's talking like he is on a record.
I remember.
It's like a whole different smooth personality. It's dope. It was dope to hear, you know, on Sirius XM.
Yeah, I like when he says some powerful stuff because I remember other memories I have of Juicy J DJing shows like at the University of Tennessee where we'd open up and then he'd go on afterwards, 36 Mafia, the big group, and you'd hear like, how many of y'all like sex?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? How many of y'all do anal sex? And then everyone's like, yeah. And I was like, this is insane. Like, he was just saying the most craziest 3-6 stuff. Like, and then the crowd was going in. They were like, ah, they're just going crazy. And I was like, this is 36 Mafia, the same thing.
Rockstar.
Mm-hmm. Dirty South rock star. And then it's just normal.
B.B. King.
Yes. And then it makes an impact wherever you go. I remember at another time, we were backstage in the green room area. Again, I think this was a Chameleon Air show, and he was just like, hey, man, went to this crazy party. He told us about some crazy party he went at Playboy Mansion, and he saw, like, you know, one of the Owen brothers, like going in with one of the playmates, and you're just like, what? And he's like, all right, I'm going on stage. I'll see you in a little bit. And then he just gets on. You're like, wow. So a riot and definitely a presence whenever you see Juicy J. So it's cool that someone that's out there like that has a possibility or at least the ambition to run a record label.
Right.
It's been around since the 1880s.
He's got the credentials to say it.
Very much so.
Like you said, he got a Grammy and what, a Grammy and a...
An Academy Award.
Award. So both. Same record?
Academy Award was It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp from the movie...
Hustle and Flow.
Hustle and Flow.
Which we talked about last time. Eight Ball and MJG might be more compelling than Hustle and Flow.
And you said he had a relationship with Stan Lee. So once again, RIP to the Stan Lee, the creator
of Black Panther.
Many, many comics. And you kind of see him. He's like the old man that comes in and several the
creator of Spider-Man, X-Men, Black Panther, etc. Crazy.
It's more than that. I would love for you to run down the list of good old Stan Lee.
Thor.
Everything he created.
The Hulk. Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil. Doctor Strange. Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he worked with other artists.
So everything that's like on the Disney superheroes now that are, you know.
Iron Man.
Yes. Tony Stark. All that.
That's mention him. Iron Man.
What else?
That's everything I got here off a quick Google. But come on, man.
Flash, Catwoman, Batman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, Robin, really? Sandman, Superman, Wonder Woman. So there's a bunch of things he did with DC Comics and Marvel Comics.
Wow.
Both of the companies. Amazing Spider-Man, Daredevil. Like you said, Thor. Silver Surfer. I liked Silver Surfer growing up. Captain America, Beast, writer, creator.
But to go out with Black Panther and that, what's that other movie that was right after? Avengers or something?
Mm-hmm. Well, that just kind of ties them all in. But yes, all the Avengers are
kind of like Juicy J, just still wrecking way down the line. But Juicy J, you know, it's that first generation of folks who can go into an executive mode at the end of their career.
He was.
And you know why.
He died at 95. I wish I could go out at 95. It's a long time.
It would have been cool to see their collaboration.
Because
Juicy J was saying in this interview that Stan Lee was, he had specific ideas for how that he wanted to collaborate with.
Oh, man. Imagine what? That would be like, that would be a comic book. Imagine that.
Right.
3-6 Mafia and these guys like right around like a Dirty South Cat, like just doing crazy things. I don't know. And then our superheroes in the same way. Man, I can only imagine. I think that having access to creativity and just being inspired by people like that is good for education, because you're kind of letting people know that, you know, if you have ideas, write them down, put them down, put them out, get them out. That way you kind of, you're kind of like, you're making it known that you're here. You're making it known that you're making it, that you're doing something. Someone might hear you.
Absolutely. And it's a very digital and virtual and storytelling era. So
it's the importance
young people
of being
consume that kind of content all the time.
And it's kind of like people like that and us as human beings like that. It's just kind of the importance of being remembered. Like just kind of be like, hey, man, we always check our likes too to see if like what we said is making an impact or people mess with it or that day that no one felt that really. So maybe we should stop posting things like that. Kind of feedback and how we work digitally. Some people say it might be too much, but it's also kind of making us feel kind of how others feel in some weird digital way. Having all that impact. And I think, you know, the more we find out about people is the more you create and put things out.
Makes sense. I just feel like,
and I felt like I had to say that because Stanley passed away this week. So
right. We want to see more people who can make that kind of impact. And for young people, that means a lot of experimenting and exploring and, you know, being able to try things out that are practical and not just technical in terms of knowledge and the way it's demonstrated.
What do you mean technical?
Technical, like certain techniques, limited amounts of techniques. Limited techniques amounts to narrow curriculum. So there's not a real broad range that's relevant to young people. You kind of have to get in the school box to a certain extent in terms of the range of skills that you're expected to have. They're academic for the most part.
Very. Yeah. I think the social aspect is very important too.
Social aspect, super important. And that is why a lot of the modes of communication that social media offer would be worthy of exploration in a regular school curriculum.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could assign homework on a Snapchat. I don't know if I said that before.
But you have. It makes sense.
It's just like, I can't get kids to open the binder, do this. It's just like, oh, please, please. Just, hey, I got a snap from, you know.
Oh, really?
From this, you know, and in that, it just explains the whole, I just answer this question or, you know, what the answer to these two. What do you think about this? Yes or no? You know, and
right.
That's all the engagement you would need just to kind of have them remember what they did that day, man. Mm-hmm. So I wish, you know, and a lot of schools have that strict, like kind of no phone policy.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just strict this. And I understand the distraction, right? Mm-hmm. I understand that, you know, I understand that their frontal lobe is still developing and obviously they're not. You know, whenever they read a text and it's like something like, oh, this is bad, it affects them a lot more because, you know, at least the kids we teach because they're, you know, middle school, that it just affects them a lot more. So you kind of have to teach them like, hey, don't get too involved in this conversation. We're here for this school. It's like, no, but she said she didn't like me. Or so, you know what I'm saying? So it just like it affects them a lot more than you and I, where you and I can be like, this is just some BS. And you put my phone away and get to work.
Right.
It's just hard for them to gauge that. So I understand that aspect of schools limiting phones for that reason, or at least having them put up, because it might get out of hand, especially. Right. What do you think?
Well, I wonder if you challenge them to have a contest of making snaps about a certain concept or content. I wonder what would happen.
I think they would create it. I think some people do not know how to. I'm pretty sure there's awesome schools and awesome teachers who are already using this and engaging lessons like this.
Right.
But I still think there's like a lot of teachers, one, who just don't know that technology in the first place to be using it as much.
I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Do I need to?
It took me a while to get on that Snapchat. But, you know, it just there's that aspect. Another aspect is kind of like all the red tape with you know, messaging students in general, right? Mm. Like there's all that paperwork. Oh, no, you know, you use this platform. You can only send emails or Google Classroom. Like, you know, they're just always real specific. And you're like, well, the kids aren't on Google Classroom or emails. So I'm trying to get on their platform just to kind of get the information to their brain. I'm not trying to like, you know, and you always read in the news that, you know, there's all these crazy, weird teachers that do take advantage of students, and like we understand why that tape is there, we understand why those rules are there, but sometimes you're like you're trying to figure out what platform to reach these kids, man, and sometimes it's hard to use it because of the barriers that the public school has you know, in doing this. And so I wish things were a little bit different, or I just wish that we were just kind of the educational system in general would just kind of up on all that. Yeah, I wish a lot of things would be different, you know. But, you know, I think government and education is still trying to catch up with this digital revolution. And so, you know, hopefully they'll just get a little bit better. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the kids are in school 8 hours a day. Students, right? So what are we producing in those 8 hours? Are we producing amazing reading skills? You know, can I figure out trigonometry by fourth grade? You got to really think. Like, could you imagine all the things we could have done with a YouTube present in the 80s and 90s? You know what I mean?
In 8 hours.
You could really kill it using the phone, iPad, like really do some amazing stuff. I just, you know, I don't know. I still think we're adjusting to trying to figure out how the digital world of today can exist on 200-300-year-old education system, if you will.
Yeah.
Maybe even older than that.
And I mean, of course, testing accountability drives a lot of curriculum decisions as well.
Yeah, all the teachers hate the testing. And some of the parents, and especially the kids. They're like, what the heck? More testing.
Well, so yeah, I think that mm-hmm. it's tough to do too much exploration.
You and I have talked about like our dream school and what it would be.
Yep.
And it would always be in my mind, like, you know, a van or some like, you know, like half a charter bus or something, like something real fly that, you know, looks like it'll hold about 30 people.
A fleet
20
of
people.
A
Actually,
fleet
maybe
of
not
lift.
30. I'm sorry. Like 24, 20 kids, maybe just 18 or something.
Five Suburbans.
As a teacher, I say, like, the numbers get smaller. Nine. No, but I'm just saying, like, a good, like, around 20. And they would just drive and have Wi-Fi, and all the kids would have devices or iPads or Chromebook or something that they would, you know, interact with.
Rolling.
And the classroom wouldn't be in a building. It would be mobile, and it would be like a field trip or, you know, today we're going to go help feed the homeless as part of, you know, our elective, or, you know, doing something social or something for the community.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other day, we're going to go to the planetarium, and because this will be our science class, and then you go to the botanical garden for, another science lesson,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of build on that, you know. And I just see that, just, I don't know, that to me is like kind of our pop-up school.
Mm-hmm.
of ideal dream school of just kind of having, like, you know, kids, you know, and not all kids. You definitely don't want, like, you know, kindergarten people out all day. They need to feel safe, obviously, but definitely, like, when they get older, I think it's the idea of more like apprenticeships or internships, or just kind of like applying the skills that our world already kind of delivers to them a lot quicker than they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. I feel like that would be more beneficial. And
yep.
You have a master's in education, right? So
I
like
do.
It's kind of like what you always talk about, quadrant D. It's because it's kind of applying all that learning.
Right.
So I'd love to hear your input rather than me just ramble over them, you know.
I agree with the application, applying the learning. You know, what is this for? And the tradition is still kind of raising a clerk in many ways, you know.
Uh-huh.
The traditional education system, public education system, it's kind of raising a clerk to a certain extent.
Raising the clerk?
Yeah, you know, you're able to write and report and compute and follow mm-hmm. instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously not that square. I mean, there's all kinds of different options of curriculum and fine arts and electives and innovative teachers and all kinds of stuff going on. But if you're in a situation where you have a lot of teacher turnover and you have a lot of teachers that aren't culturally connected to these students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it affects it. I'm just saying, like, if I go 8 hours at making burgers, I'm going to be really dope. I'm going to be really awesome for 8 hours of making burgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're going to school for 8 hours. What are we really dope? What are we really amazing at?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. You feel what I'm saying? Like, is it like a social aspect? Or are we just kind of like, are they gathering like social knowledge, how to act, how to behave?
Definitely.
What's appropriate relationships with friends / you know, like how to act with adults, how to act when I eat, how to act when I, you know, in the gym, how to act. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely a big aspect on, you know, kind of how to be a human being, because that's how we learn from our peers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely that going on. And that's important, right? But I think the way is like, how much are we reading? How much math are we doing? It's kind of measured by these, you know, state accountability tests like you're talking about.
Right. And that's another thing is, you know, making time to make reading useful.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like,
there's time where you have to read based on your interest.
Because we have a lot of people like from the community that do donate, you know, like luckily mm-hmm. there's websites like Donors Choose where kind of people can kind of reach out and like teachers can put, hey, this is my school list. I need these things. Mm-hmm. And people will be like, all right, this is a kind of a nonprofit way mm-hmm. of me donating and helping an actual teacher in need, rather than just pay my taxes or rather than just donating to something I don't know. Mm-hmm. This is kind of really direct and it's awesome. You know, we used to work with an artist after the What to Do mixtapes, Charlie Boy, and he was signed to DJ Bull. And DJ Bull has donated to
Charlie.
You.
Yes, he has. DJ Bull. And a number of other folks, man, just, you know, sending money in order to get supplies, in order for...
Dictionaries.
Yeah,
dictionaries. I remember that being on your list a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I got some off you.
A few class. People. Rick Ramirez, mm-hmm. DJ Bull, Frank Mendoza, a veteran teacher, like first African-American teacher at, is it Pease Elementary?
Yes.
Where your daughter goes? Yes. Olivia Green. Mm-hmm. She bought some dictionaries.
Shout out to Olivia Green.
Yeah, just folks
and helping. So we always, there's people, countless like amounts of people who help out directly to the community, helping with school. And there's also like artists help out with yes, the school drives at the beginning of the school year. Shout out to my man Trey the Truth, who also does Relief Gang and just helps the community in general. People mm-hmm. drowning in their homes, he's pulling up a boat, that's a drive. Yeah, but before that he always had Trey Day, which is like in, you know, an event in Houston where there'd be a lot of hip-hop artists and they'd give out backpacks, you know, other school supplies and things that, you know, students in communities, I think the first ones were in Third Ward and now they're in like different parts of the north side of Houston, but they bring in community people and the art, you know, artists get to kind of make it like, cause he, you know, he always has really good relationships with many, many artists, especially mm-hmm. the ones who are like currently hot. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always like he brings them down. There's a big drive. But you were talking about, that's all good for the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And the artists can do that. Like Trey and the other people in different communities can bring in those supplies at the beginning of the year. But what did you say it lacked?
Well, school culture to me is all about literacy and learning and culture, like culture of the learner.
Mm-hmm.
So literacy,
learning things about the social aspect, right? You're learning things about each other,
mm-hmm.
the teacher and the students.
Learning and building culture. Uh-huh. And so space for them to fall in love with reading
mm-hmm.
and writing. And if not in love, just, you know, a stable relationship.
At least able to complete the task of, you know.
To read about what you're interested in, because okay. everybody's interested in something.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so just having your own... reading identity, writing identity, scholar identity, talking, listening, you know? So, yeah, I think that's really important. Just making space for those things, making space for a culture to be built, you know, for you to get to know who's around you and really get an understanding and, you know, perspective taking and, you know, a lot of what falls under what they would call socially emotional learning, but basically just like the human stuff,
mm-hmm.
'cause you're a little human.
Mm-hmm.
So just socializing in the wild where, you know, student culture is completely autonomous, that's cool. But there's also just a lot of guidance and a lot of important work that can be done because it's the right thing to do for a young child to help them develop and think and grow and feel safe and all those things.
Yes.
And there's no tests on that.
No, there isn't. And mm-hmm. and it's also kind of like, at least with the literacy aspect, right? Like mm-hmm. the people who are read on grade level, that's they're going to be okay. At least by eighth grade. If you mm-hmm. read on eighth grade level, you're pretty much able to
function.
Read a contract, right? If you're mm-hmm. able to read the Constitution in eighth grade and understand what all those words mean, you're going to be just fine buying a house, reading that contract, or at least mm-hmm. finding someone that can read that for you, or doing other things in life that need like intense reading with that kind of vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, like those automatically kind of give you the skill to do things in life already. But it's almost like going back to the school drives, like they're there at the beginning, but kind of like your question is, where's the rest of the community the rest of the year?
Yeah.
Like right now.
The literacy drive, the, mm-hmm. the, what are you learning drive and what do you want to learn drive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the culture of many things, but you know, safety, willingness to take risks, willingness to be wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, willingness to share and be able to communicate in a way that, you know, for the greater good, just, you know, just regular old human skills.
Yes.
Social skills.
And those skills can't only be at school.
No.
It needs to come from like the house or a Boys and Girls Club or in a baseball or soccer team or something that, you know, where members of the community are interacting with the kids from their community to make them better citizens.
That's true. But like you said, we have them 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So it can come from those other places, but those other places don't have them for 8 hours a day.
No. What are we doing in those 8 hours,
man? What are we doing? Hip-hop grew up. That's what we're doing.
Hip-hop grew up, yes. This was a great, great segment. We'll see you guys again next week. This will be around Thanksgiving time.
Mm-hmm. Turkey time. When you know your school culture, by the way. Like, when you go home for turkey time.
Yeah, you're right.
Whatever's going on in that campus, that's pretty much you for the year.
Yeah. So shout out to all the people in education that know exactly that struggle.
Keep working. Be strong.
And stay warm. Hip-hop grew up. Peace.